My name is Paola Testa. I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another project by Anthony Gormley in Trafalgar Square. The date is the 13th of August 2009 and the time is 11:18 a.m. Please could you tell me your name, your date of birth and where you're from?
Yes, my name's John Platt. I was born on the 7th of May 1958 and I'm from Manchester.
Have you travelled down especially today for this?
No, I happen to be down here on business, so it actually fitted in quite nicely. I'm squeezing this in between meetings, so which is a I've left a meeting, I've got to go straight back to one. It's a little bit strange to go from one to the other.
Do they know what you're doing in between?
My work colleagues do. Yes, so they're all pretty much avidly logging on. A couple of them might get down to watch, but we have an office in London, so the people in the London office may come, some of them, and the people in the Manchester office will just be watching online or doing work.
And has coming here and seeing the plinth been how you would imagine it?
I think so, because I've checked it out. I've watched the broadcast a couple of times online, so I've got a reasonable idea of what it's like, and coming down today and having a look at it. For me, it's just important to work out which way to face, because you can face it, obviously four ways at least. And working out kind of how to be on the plinth so that people can get the best view.
How did you first hear about One Another?
I can't remember actually. I've always kind of half followed Anthony Gormley. I kind of went to see his statues on the beach in near Liverpool, and must have been on the web or on the news or something. I can't remember. And then I went on the website, and I felt like a lot of people thought, well, have a go. Put your name forward and see what happens.
And what is it about the project that appealed to you?
Well, I suppose it's a bit nutty, actually, if that's the honest answer. Kind of like, well, what I'm going to do is pretty lowbrow and see, but so it just appealed to me that it's kind of part of something, I wouldn't say historical, but it's kind of part of something that's an event in London, and it's a bit silly, and what I quite liked about it was that no one until I got here today has asked me what I plan to do. So there's no kind of judgment around quality involved in getting picked, that's for sure.
And what is it that inspired you to go ahead and fill out the application form?
I think, I just think it's a chance to, just doing something different, really. I mean, I think, getting out of, we all, have routines in our lives, and sometimes you can get a bit stuck in a routine, and sometimes, well, it's always a good idea to try new things, do things you haven't done before, I think, and just have a go at something.
And when you first heard that you had been given a slot, how did you react?
Well, you kind of have, I'm sure like most people, you have slightly mixed feelings, because you kind of, a lot of people will be applying, there's going to be, it's a pretty random selection process, therefore, did I expect to be picked? Not really. And then I got a call whilst I was on holiday, actually. And, first thing was excited, glad I'd been picked, because it feels like you've won something. And then you kind of go, oh, crap, is the idea I had in my head worth spending an hour on the plinth to do? I quickly decided it needed a bit of work, put it that way.
Have you had a few ideas, or has it taken a lot of time to decide what you're doing?
I had an idea when I applied, which was really a sort of dumb, silly idea, and it's still part of what I'm going to do, but it very quickly, as I thought about it, I thought, it's one idea, it's one kind of gag, if you like, it's not going to sustain an hour on the plinth. I think the last thing you want to be is kind of boring. You want people, whether it's good, bad or indifferent, I think, you do want to go on there and kind of get some kind of reaction, I think.
So can you tell us exactly what you will be doing?
I'll be doing, the act is titled Guess the Plinth, and I'll be doing rather lame impressions of famous plinths when I'm up there. There's about 16 to do if I get through all of them, ranging from Plinth Harry to Robin Hood, Plinth of Thieves, Freddy Plinthoff, Plintheth Michael of Kent, if I can say that. And the grand finale is the artist formerly known as Plinth. So it's that.
And where did that idea come from?
Well, the original idea was I was going to do the artist formerly known as Plinth, and I was going to dress up as Prince, and basically do kind of air guitar for an hour to his the medley of his greatest hits. And I just, the more I thought about that, I thought that's quite funny for about a minute. So actually, what I want is more things like that that are funny for a minute. So it didn't change; it's just added to. And you know, various other people I'm you know friends with have contributed to some of the more stupid ones.
And why have you chosen to do that for the hour?
Well, I suppose I wanted to, because I think it's a bit of a nutty thing. I kind of wanted to do something funny rather than something serious, I guess. Although it has a serious purpose in a sense, because it's dedicated to, and part of what I'm going to do is publicising the fund of a friend who's raising money to treat a sick child of his. So that's not a big part of it. It's really just, you know, a name check, and I'm going to have a sign up there for his website. But I think it's, you know, having got the attention of a few people on me, it felt like I should use that attention for not just self-congratulation, but a little bit of, okay, well, if you're looking, you might as well find out about its website, and if they check out this website, maybe he'll get some funds for the research that he's trying to get.
And how long have you been putting the idea together?
Well, when did I get the phone call? About 2 weeks ago. So I applied, I don't know, a month and a half ago, and then it was always going to be, I didn't really take it seriously, because you don't think you're going to get picked. So you kind of go, well, if I get picked, I'll go on as the artist formerly known as Blint, ha ha ha. And then you get picked and go, okay, is that... So then quite quickly, I was on holiday with my family and they're all going, you know, not sure about that. So we started thinking, well, maybe it should be another plinth. And then maybe we think, well, then we, as we started to think of more and more, we thought, well, it actually should be a lot of them. And actually some of them should be a little bit, you know, it shouldn't just be a tour of the royal family. But, you know, can we think of some more obscure ones as well? Can we have a bit of fun with it? And then actually the other sort of source of inspiration was I was in New York on business last week and I ended up in the world's biggest fancy dress shop, as it appeared. And a couple of the ideas just came out of there. I mean, one plinthess layer, I hadn't on my list, but they were selling a plinthess layer wig. So I thought, brilliant, I'll buy one of those, stick it on my head. And that's another one. So, you know, it's kind of, I've had a few people chipping in. So there's been a bit of a game going on with my friends and they've been sending me new suggestions, and some of which I'm using, some of which I'm not, because you have to have a way of making it funny, I think, or at least making it not obvious. In, you know, some of them are obvious and easy to guess, some of them are a bit harder.
Have you deliberately involved others in this?
Yes, because I'm a great believer that you kind of, you know, when you're trying to kind of, you know, build an idea like that, it's you know, I mean, I work for an innovation company. I work for a creative company, and it would be very rare for someone to have an idea and develop it without involving others. So there's some people I've involved who I think would be helpful, and then the vast majority of the people at work know nothing about it, and they know I'm doing it, but I won't tell them what it is. You know, because I'm, you know, I think if I got a kind of lukewarm reaction, I don't think that would be helpful before I went up there.
And how will people give their answers? Are you wanting people in
they can square? Shout it out. I mean, I think it's not, you know, to be honest, I'm not going to keep a scorecard. The basic format is I'm going to change outfits, then I'm going to sit there for a couple of minutes, then I'm going to invite them to guess the plinth by means of a sign, and if there's enough people they want to shout out, you know, then fine. But it's, and for the audience at home, and then I'll do another one. Until for us, you know, I've got 16, I think, so I expect I'll get through all of them, because, you know, that's about 4 minutes each. And they only take about, actually, really, would only take about 10 seconds to do. So that's my only nervousness, is there's a long time sat there when it might be obvious what the answer is.
And could you tell me a little bit more about the fund that you're...
Yes, a very good friend of mine, it's a guy called White, and he and his wife, Colleen, have three kids. They have a pair of boy twins, 4.5 years old, and one of them, Felix, has got a very serious form of childhood cancer. It's called neuroblastoma. Neuroblastoma, that's the one. And basically, he's been going through this now for about a year. I mean, he's in a fight for his life, quite literally, and I just spoke to him few minutes ago, and he's at the hospital kind of wishing me on. And he's basically, he's got a fund that he's been running. I think it's partly to kind of give them a focus. It's there also partly to raise funds. It's partly to raise funds for two things. One is for any treatment they might need that's not part of the NHS. So that might be respite care, or it might be complementary therapy or something. And also raise money for research into the cancer that he's got. It's quite a rare cancer, and there's not much funding for rare cancers. It just doesn't happen. So he's trying to raise, so whatever they don't need, I guess, will be used for that.
And have you done things before to help support this?
Well, Matt used to, till recently, was working for the same company as me, and the company, a lot of people in the company have done stuff. He's organised events, you know, fun runs and various other things. We had one guy at the office ran around the park next to the work in his underpants to raise money for the charity, for the fund. So a few people have got involved, and you know, this is more about a name check and a bit of awareness. We're not going around rattling tins, but and it's partly also just to sort of make him feel supported. You know, in reality, will this raise a load of money for the fund? No, I don't think so, but it'll make him feel like, you know, there's more people rooting for them than, you know, than otherwise.
What impact would you like to have by going up and doing what you're doing today?
I don't know. I'd like to kind of make a few people laugh, really, and I'd like people, you know, that's all. And, you know, and if I can raise a bit of awareness for Matt and Felix, then great. But I'm not, you know, that's not the main purpose. That's not the main how we're going to spend. I'm going to spend the hour talking about cancer. I'm going to spend the hour doing impressions. It's kind of almost sponsored by the appeal for Felix, and you know, so I have it's a low brow act with low expectations, really. I'm not looking to change the world.
What would you like to take away from the experience for yourself?
I think, I suppose a sense, I mean, like all these things, you kind of, if you put yourself through something that is a little bit of a challenge, then a sense of having, you know, having had the nerve to do it, I suppose, and hopefully the sense of having prepared something that was enjoyed by others. But, you know, again, it's not, I don't have any lofty ambitions.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the work you're doing, please?
Yes, I work for an innovation company called What If, and we do, basically, we do kind of innovation for large companies who aren't good at it themselves. So if you think about, you know, everyone from Coca-Cola to Citibank to Unilever to others, they're all trying to develop new products, new services, new ideas for things. And that's a kind of special skill, and it requires a special set of abilities and a special process, and they don't always able to do that themselves in-house. So they hire us or companies like us to kind of do it for them. So it's developing new ideas is my job.
And what is your role within that company?
Well, I'm what's known, well, I've kind of, we're allowed to make up our own titles. It's a fairly crazy company, but my actual title would be Senior Inventor, and I lead projects that are designed to develop new ideas. So often, you know, most of the work we get will be in the form of a specific brief and a specific project with a specific outcome. So if it was, I don't know, if it was Unilever, they might say, we need to know, I don't know, how to take this dull soap and make it more exciting for affluent women over 35. And you might then do a lot of kind of investigative kind of talking to those kind of people, idea generation, kind of prototyping ideas, evaluating those. It's that kind of world.
And is it primarily a creative job?
Well, it's a mixture of creativity and, I suppose, business strategy, because you need both, because, you know, typically our clients are good at business strategy, or they might not be, but they're generally, that's their business. They're not so good at creativity, but if you just have creativity without any kind of discipline, you'll just have nutty ideas that don't do anything. You know, in the end, it's all about, you know, in the end, they're businesses, they're trying to launch new things that will make money. And you need to know with some degree of likelihood that if you know, the ideas you create are created to meet a need, that's a genuine need, and they will make the money.
And what's your background then? How did you get into that line of work?
Well, my background was, a long time ago, did an English degree. I've always been good at writing anyway. And I went into the advertising industry, where I was for about 20 years. I was a copywriter, then I became a creative director. So my job for a long time was thinking of ideas for ads. And it's kind of a natural, the business I'm in now in is a bit different, but related. And it's, you know, it's ideas for products, ideas for services, ideas for, you know, businesses, that kind of thing. So it's, you know, I spent my life thinking up ideas. This isn't one of my better ones, probably.
And are you interested in the arts?
Yeah, generally, I wouldn't say I was a fanatic. I mean, I think we like, you know, I kind of like sort of, you know, I say we've all kind of followed Anthony Gore. I like kind of art that makes, you know, that is genuinely, you know, sort of interesting and different, but actually you feel is kind of artistic in a way. So, you know, there's kind of, I'm not a big fan, for example, of Tracy Emin, because I kind of think, I can't always see the creativity in what she does. I can see the sensation or the news value. I can't necessarily see the art, if you like. Whereas I think I can see it in, for example, Anthony Gormley's work and the things that we've seen. Well, we go to art galleries and stuff, but I wouldn't say that we are art fixated.
Would you describe this project as art?
Yeah, it's art. I mean, it's, what is it? I mean, it's art. Broadly speaking, it's art. Individually, is it art? Well, I suppose it's how you define art. It's everyone's doing a performance of some sort, so yes, I think it is. Whether it's high art or low art or good art or bad art is again going to be variable, and I suppose that's a matter of what people think of it.
And what does it mean to you to be a part of the project and one of the 2,400 people?
Well, I think you feel fortunate to be chosen, and then it's kind of, you know, it's nice to be part of something that you feel is a sort of, you know, what a significant summer event in the UK, you know. So, you know, fortunate to be chosen, I suppose. I mean, right now, 10 minutes before I do it, maybe not so fortunate to be chosen, but I'm sure that when I've done it, I'll be glad I did it, that's for sure.
And have you been watching the project online?
Yes, not avidly, but I've, you know, as much as anything to check out, you know, the sort of the plinth, you know, where is it? What's the view from it? What's the view up to it? How would you use the space, if you like, without either falling off or, you know, just making, you know, just having a think about, well, that's the platform, kind of which way would you face? What, you know, if you're going to use signs, how would you hold them up even, you know? Do you need a chair? It's that kind of thing. And also just to see what other people are doing. And I suppose the biggest fear you have is someone else does your act before you get up there. So far, touch wood, I haven't seen it. That's maybe an irrational fear, but you kind of think, well, I'd like to be, if it was the third or fourth person doing impressions of famous plinths, it wouldn't feel quite as, I wouldn't feel quite as good about it, I guess.
Do you think it's a good way of seeing the people of Britain today?
Well, I'm not sure I'll see the people of Britain, because I think I'll see a lot of people who aren't from Britain, but in the square. I don't know. I mean, you've got a space in, you know, one of the most iconic places in Britain. There's probably more people who watch it online than are watching in the square, and you know that's probably the bigger audience actually. So, you know, again, that's another thing you have to think about when you're watching it online is what's the experience like for the people in the square, but also how do you make it work for people who are watching online? You just got to think about that, I guess. So that's not answering your question. The question was, will I see the people of Britain? I don't know.
Do you have any expectations about what it will be like?
Our fears. I might sit there thinking, this is crap. And isn't time passing slowly? But I have a feeling it won't be like that. I have a feeling time will pass quite quickly. But I don't know. I'm hoping that I enjoy it. That's really... But you don't know. I mean, you might, you know, you're sort of torn between excitement and embarrassment. I guess most people probably feel similar things. That's their naturally... natural performers or natural extroverts, but part of me wants to do it and part of me is feeling, you know, I'm a bit old for this and maybe it's a dumb thing to do.
And have you taken part in arts projects before?
Not really. I mean, I suppose the closest thing I can describe as a parallel to this was I went on a game show when I lived in Australia. I went on Tale of the Century, and it has similar parallels in the sense that you apply not expecting to be picked, then you get picked, and then you go on, and then it was... I have to say I didn't win. I wasn't very good on the show, And I came away thinking that was a lot of fun. And I don't, you know, I'd embarrass myself probably. But it was a good fun thing to do because I'd not been, you know, being on a game show. You've only watched, if you're on it, you know, it's another world and you're part of that world for a few hours. So in the sense of kind of mixture of kind of trepidation and expectation is the most similar thing I can think I've done. Except there were no, I didn't win a prize then and there are no prizes today. That's more so similar, I guess. Well, that was just, we lived there for 11 years and just after I got married, we had the opportunity to go. We didn't have children and my other half was offered a job out there and I knew I could get work out there. And it was one of those, I suppose there's moments in your life when you go, you'd be dumb not to. You know, someone's offering us a job to go and live in Australia for 11 years. And why, you know, our view then was, if you look back on your life when you're kind of 60 and thought I could have gone to live in Australia and didn't, you'd kick yourself. So that's what we did. We only planned to go for 2 years, but we ended up staying a lot longer.
And what are the things that are important to you in your life now?
Well, obviously, I mean, I suppose most people would say, and I'm no exception, I mean, family really is the most important thing. You know, wife, three boys, dog, family beyond that, and then friends. I mean, I think, you know, beyond that, I think being happy and being surrounded by, you know, family and friends that, you know, you love, and that's, you know, I don't think it's much bigger than that. So I think that's the most important thing.
And how would you describe yourself as a person?
I don't know. Well, good, terrific, isn't it? I don't know. It's a difficult question because I think I would describe myself as, most people would say about me, that I'm kind of sort of quite calm and centered, although I think that's more of an exterior appearance than an interior reality. I don't know. I try to. I try to kind of help people get along. I mean, I'm a middle child. I'm one of kind of nature's diplomats. So I think I describe myself as someone who likes a peaceful life and likes to help others have one.
And how would you summarise your experience of this project since you heard that you had a place and to this moment before going up?
Well, it hasn't really it's felt a bit kind of surreal, I suppose, because you know, you get a phone call and then you get, you know, a sort of letter saying this is where you turn up. And actually, then you can watch it on. And it's one of those things you think, well, I know, I know that's where I'm going to be in a couple of weeks' time. Until you actually arrive here today and then it just feels a bit weird. You know, the experience has been kind of, I suppose, feeling like I need to do a bit of work on what I'm going to do and take it seriously, otherwise I'll kick myself, you know, because I don't want to waste the opportunity and just go up there and do something. You know, a lot of people have gone up there and just sat there or done something that I would say was, you know, I'm glad I didn't do that. And so I suppose there's a, you know, the experience beforehand is more a kind of sense of, you know, mixture. Well, I suppose you kind of just worry that what you plan to do is going to be a bit crap, you know, and I think that's what goes through your mind, but more than anything. And you work hard to try and make it less crap, but in the end, you don't really know. And it's this weird thing, there's no precedent for it. And there isn't much reaction from the audience in the square, and you can't know what the reaction is from the audience that's watching. So, you know, I've asked my friends from work to kind of send me texts and emails. So I'm hoping they say it's going great, isn't it funny? Because I'm not sure, you know, if I've got time to check them. But, you know, so I think, you know, that's the biggest, I suppose, if you look back on my experience so far has been, it's just felt a bit, you know, nervous, really, in a good way, but nervous.
Okay, is there anything that you would like to add or tell us before we finish?
No, not really. I say it's kind of, I'm hoping that it raises a few smiles, that it's not too embarrassing for me to have done it. And I'm hoping that it raises a little bit of awareness for Matt and Felix and their appeal. And if, you know, if I come off feeling like I was, you know, well, I won't know, actually. I think that's the truth, is I won't know how it went over because there's so little. Unless, you know, there's a massive audience that are all cheering, which I don't expect. it'll be a little bit light. I won't really know how it went until later, but I'm hoping it will go okay.
Thank you.
All right.